Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We have Andrew furiously working on the board. S&P futures, not so hot. We are down again today after yesterday's pretty lousy day. I mean, in fact, very lousy day. We got S&P futures down 23, NASDAQ futures down 142. And we had somewhat of a record yesterday. These are records you don't really want, Kevin. Are we have Professor Kevin with us?
You got me with you, yeah.
Do you want to have the record where NVIDIA in one day wiped out $300 billion in market cap? That's a lot. One day. Whether it should have been there.
It's a little, yeah. Yeah, you could have a pretty good night out on that.
Even with today's prices. Even the high-end saloons you and I go to, right?
Yeah, the high-end saloons. that's pretty good.
Yeah, the high-end saloons.
Tom, high-end saloons don't serve wings.
Yeah, remember the, you know, speaking of wings, the phenomenon that is going on with chicken wings is really something. There's a place that I go once in a while, the Peoria Market. It's the most bizarre kind of meat store you've ever been to. The everything you walk into the cooler and they give you plastic gloves, right, or plastic mittens, and all the meat is out on the table. And you shove it in a plastic bag and walk out yourself, right? And they have like everything in there, anything you want, you know, ethnic. You want pig's feet, you want neck bones, you got them, right? Every kind of rib in the world. And it's an unbelievable place. Sometimes I'd say I'm not the normal clientele. Is that a fair statement? But their prices now. I'll give you a quiz, Mr. O'Neill. 40 pounds of chicken wings, how much?
40 pounds?
Yeah.
Oh, hell, I don't know, 40 pounds. Let's see, quick math. I don't know, $200?
$129.
Okay.
40 pounds of chicken legs, how much?
Oh, versus the wings?
Yeah.
I don't know, $150 then?
$29.
Oh, $29. Because there's not as much demand for chicken legs?
Yeah, well, everybody wants the wings. Every bar's got wings. As a matter of fact, remember we went to...
It seems to me that you could probably build a product and do a little promotion around legs.
What's the place that renamed themselves? Wing Stop to Leg Stop or Wing and Leg Stop or something?
Wings Etc. Did it become something? No, I don't know. Is there a place called Wings and Legs now?
No, or they put legs in there, wings and something. Remember the, we went to, I'm going to think, what's that place out by Darrell? The kind of log cabin old bar. It's really good. It's got the dance floor. We've been there a few times. I think we went there, unfortunately, I think we went there after Bob's wake that night. Anyway, they had a special on a Sunday. Sunday special, this is going back. About to go on a while. It was a three-piece chicken dinner with, you know, potatoes and gravy, corn on the cob, and like something else for like $7.75 or something. It was an incredible deal. And I'm sitting there, okay, well, I'm going to get the chicken. I'm not going to get a breast or the thigh. You didn't get the wing. The wing's more valuable than the other stuff. So they would snip the wings off the chicken they get for the chicken dinners, and they'd sell you a three-piece dinner, and the piece was missing is the wings. Wings are The best,
which they can then sell for what, $1.50?
Yeah, well, the wings that, well, I'm going to say, you know, I'm not going to that many.
I've seen the ads for places that have their wing night special where it's like 60 cents each or something.
Yeah,
like
well, plus somebody decreed that a wing is really a half a wing. I don't know who that was. If you get 10 wings, you really get 5, right?
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think.
You get 10 pieces. You don't get 10 things.
I don't know about the best, but I think right up there are the wings at the Tripoli. And Nick sells a bunch of them. But when you go to the Restaurant Depot, there's like 5 or 6 different sizes of wings, from, you know, down to the pigeon wings, basically. And he gets the biggest ones. And he sells. They're $15 for 10. So it's $15 for 5 wings. That's a lot. But they're good. I mean, they're real good. They're huge. You know, they're not the little ones. But anyway, it is stunning when you look around, when you observe, Kevin. Observing is always good. It seems like I observe more than now that I'm doing Stocks and Jacks. Because everything we talk about, if you observe, you kind of notice, right? Saw somebody on Sunday buying lottery tickets on their credit card, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I would never have even thought of that 15, 20 years ago. Yeah. So what?
Well, it could have been a debit card.
That's better? Yeah, I guess it's better.
It is, because you're essentially paying cash for it at that point.
True. Plus, you know, if you paid, a lot of people don't carry cash. I don't know why, but they don't. And she bought her gas on the credit card. It wasn't like she walked in and bought 15 lottery tickets and, you know, that's all she had, so... But still, I noticed it. A little weird. You know, you can't buy gift cards on a credit card. I don't think. I think you have to pay. Some place you got to pay cash for those. Anyway, I don't know about everywhere, but
yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
I think I bought gift cards, but used the check card because I generally lead a cash life for the most part.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to do way more of that. Especially the places that don't want to take it. It's a reason for me not to go there. But what do you make of, obviously the big news today is the market sell-off yesterday. And NVIDIA's down, like I say, $300 billion in one day for a company. And we've been talking for how long, just these numbers flying up and down. These stocks, they're so big, they have so many shares outstanding, that the numbers we're talking about, I mean, yesterday's move in NVIDIA, so like I said, $300 billion, you know, this is not ancient history. I'm going to say 10 years ago, I don't know how many $3 billion companies there were. 5, maybe? 10? I mean, a trillion-dollar company. What was the first trillion-dollar company? What was that during COVID? Beginning of COVID? I mean,
I don't know, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I mean, I should actually check that out and talk about it. Russell probably know when he comes in. Russell knows all this stuff because he knows
especially if you say it now, because then he'll go look it up.
Oh, yeah, he'll sneak. He'll do the Google on me. See, a guy like Russell, you can't really have him on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, because he'd have, like, his phone with him or something. Just saying.
Yeah, so instead of phone a friend, he'd do friend a phone?
Something like that. You could never do that show anymore, phone a friend, right? Now that you have the friend to be kicking up to Google. Anyway. I mean,
or ChatGPT.
Yeah, or something.
Or Alexa. Yeah, let me talk to my friend Alexa.
Yeah, let me talk to you. That would be interesting. Let me talk to my friend Alexa. I love that. But what you have, they interviewed, they had this horrible shooting here in Chicago the other day. And I mean, Kevin, to be honest with you, I don't know what the motivation is for a lot of killings, but some of them, you know, they got something or whatever. Whatever the deal is, but this thing in Forest Park, evidently some guy, 30 years old, I don't know anything about his background yet. They've been pretty tight with that. 5:30 in the morning, walked through the train at the Forest Park station. Whether he got on there or not, no reason. I mean, again, details are sketchy. He allegedly pulled out a gun, and while 4, I think, homeless people were sleeping, shot 1 in one car and went and shot 3 in the other car, like right in the head, executed them. I mean, and they say that they never knew what hit him. Well, I'll tell you what, the third guy who got shot with the 3 in a row, he was probably up.
Probably had a pretty good idea what was coming.
Yeah, probably had a pretty good idea. And then the guy hops on another train, and they have the cameras, and they found him on the Pink Line somewhere, which is a which means he would have had to come downtown in the blue and flip onto the pink line to go some other place.
There's a pink line now?
Yeah. The pink line is the... remember the one that used to go down like 18th Street? And then it would hook up with the Eisenhower and go out, and all go all the way to O'Hare. And
yeah.
It now uses the track that goes through the middle of the United Center parking lot and doesn't have a station there, which is always a pet peeve of mine. And it comes around the loop and goes back, so it doesn't go all the way out to O'Hare. They call it the Pink Line.
Okay, man, I'm so distant from Chicago now in terms of navigating the joint via public transportation. It used to be a way of life, not anymore. Yeah.
Well, it's still a pretty darn good way to get around when you think about it. It could be a lot better.
I understand. I just haven't lived there in so long that I just don't know where anything is anymore.
So this brings about, for Stacks and Jacks people, because it's all zeroes into everything. It zeroes into taxation. It zeroes into are these cities healthy? What's healthy? What's not healthy? Is the economy healthy, not healthy? And they interview some, you can tell he was black by him talking. That's not really, that's untoward. And he, talk about articulate. This poor guy goes, well, it's a really messed up world. He goes, you got people that don't have any place to live. You have people who can't afford the stuff that they used to be able to afford. He says, the jobs, the prices, even if you have a job, your rates, your wage rates aren't going up fast enough to keep you. He goes, everybody's pissed off at somebody else. And I'm listening to this guy going, and I don't know where they found him, but he didn't sound like he was a professor or anything like that, but tell you what, he had his thumb on everything that's going on. I listen to him, and I'm going, before you ever say anybody doesn't know anything, be careful, because a lot of people know a lot. The guy gave an absolute, in 45 seconds, gave basically a summary of everything that's wrong in society right now. And then on top of this, you're not supposed to carry, for somebody who had concealed carry training, but I never got my license, I said the training because I wanted to go through it, you're not supposed to have concealed carry on mass transit, right? And so now some Rockford judge decides that's against your constitutional rights. You should be able to carry guns on a CTA bus. And I'm going, the Constitution really say that, Kevin? The whole thing is so contrived to me. Anyway, we've got issues, and but it's all okay. But I listened to this guy on the way in yesterday. Then I listened to the people on CNBC yesterday. In the afternoon, they had a bunch of guys that must be money managers or people that just own a lot of big stocks, right? I mean, not like me, who actually looks at each individual, and every portfolio is different, and everybody is treated differently, because everybody is different. But this guy's talking about, we're just going to have to understand the inflation is down. The Fed's done a good job. It's nothing anybody has to worry about anymore. And they just have to figure it out that everything is good. The economy is terrific, and you just got to keep investing. Now, whether you keep investing or not, I put people's money to work this week. Well, not yesterday, I didn't. But if it keeps going down, I think I probably will sneak in a little bit. The difference in point of view between this guy and the African-American gentleman they were interviewing, Kevin, it can't be further apart, can it?
Well, it can't be, and that's, you go back to your Washington bubble, your media bubble, all of them, they are so disconnected from what normal people experience. And yet they think they're normal. And that's the bigger problem. It's not that they're disconnected, that's a problem. But that they think they're normal is a huge problem, because their experience is so different from what the average person's life is, and these are the people making decisions about the average person's life with just no feeling for it whatsoever.
I agree with you. I'm not supposed to do. I agree with you, but on an intellectual level, Kevin, this is where I use the term pissed off. I'm really pissed off at people like that. Because on an intellectual level, even if you never saw a poor person, you never saw anybody struggling, even if you're so insulated If you take any kind of accounting or accounting economics class and show up ever and actually read the crap, you look at the numbers. Even if you're somebody on the fifth moon of Alpha Centauri and you're only living there by yourself, you must realize that. I think you must intellectually realize, not because anybody has to do anything I say, but intellectually realize you must know that if Kevin O'Neill is sitting in his house and he's got his stuff and he's going to work and he's buying things and everything, and all of a sudden the tax on his house, now tax isn't in the CPI, but I'll use that example anyway, the tax on your house goes from $200 a month to, you know, what should be $2,400 a year. Say it goes to $6,000. It's all of a sudden. Now you sit there and go, well, that's cool. Now I'm cutting $2,600 out of everything else I do, make that $3,600, and you're in trouble. Now the next year, for me to go on TV and say, Mr. O'Neill, what's the problem? You blew it, an idiot. This year there is no inflation.
Yeah, your taxes didn't go up this year.
Your inflation's zero. It's 1%. What's the matter? Or 2 years from now, you haven't had inflation for 2 years. What's the matter? I mean, that is so intellectually stupid, and I never want to use that term, but I'm going to have to use that. Is so intellectually.
But it is when you start talking about emotional intelligence, that's a part of it.
Yeah, man, but that's
and so it is. No, it is emotional in terms of your ability to connect with people. It is completely unintelligent.
But even yet
they all think they're intelligent.
But on an academic level, it's not intelligent, because you sit there and go, wait a minute, you just blew the guy out of the water, he's still out. I mean, whether we have inflation of these, the way these guys count it, for 2% if they meet their quote target for the next 10 years, nobody's going to catch up. Unless you have a lot of stock or a fixed income that's going to keep going, or fixed assets going to keep going up. But now it looks like that's going to stop, because the quote rate of inflation has come down. So the person that's going to be hurt going forward, not just as much, but they're not going to benefit. You're not going to get, in the first however many days of Biden's tour in office, some guy was mentioning this yesterday, Kevin, it's almost incredibly even. In the first 900 and some days of whatever many days of Trump, maybe before the market was up like 62%. And under this guy, it's up 65%. So when you have some stupido yesterday talking about maybe the market's concerned about the Democrats winning, what are you talking about? Democrats are in there. I don't think they've done that good of a job, but the market has not suffered. The idea that all we need is for a Republican in there for the market to go up is nuts. There's only been three presidents ever. Can you name them? And in a four-year term, the market was actually down.
I'll let you name them. I don't want to play a guessing game.
Go ahead, think for a second. It should be pretty obvious.
Well, the market was down at the end of Trump's tenure, wasn't it? Because of
Trump? No.
All the shutdowns?
No. The market was up.
Okay. It was up? Okay.
Well, one should be obvious. Hoover. Crash.
Yep.
And actually, the first term of Roosevelt. Okay. And the other was like the first or second term of Bush, too. So if you wanted to be a moron...
Oh, yeah, because we had the big crash, 2008.
Yeah, so... So the moron among us, which I hope I'm not, would say, gee, there's two Republicans and one Democrat. But, come on. I mean, the times were so odd when it happened. I mean, the markets, for people to say stuff like that, one lady yesterday goes, yeah, well, if you know, the reason why the market's down is probably because Harris is doing better in the polls. I go, what are you talking about? It's been up 65%, not because of her.
The market is down because of because they went after NVIDIA. But some wisdom, and it's not just the U.S. going after them, by the way. So they have some antitrust actions in Europe as well. But some wisdom from Shakespeare. I don't remember which play it was. It was probably Henry IV, where you have the young prince who's going to be the future king of England in Henry V. And he's hanging around with this guy, Falstaff. And Falstaff is sort of like the Norm Peterson of his day. You know, a lot of wisdom, not much motivation in his life. So that's who we're talking about. And, of course, the people at the castle thoroughly disapproved of this relationship that they had. But the thing that Falstaff taught him is he said, if you want to lead people, you have to be able to enter their world. And he said, and the explanation of that is you don't have to be of that world, but you have to relate to other people's worlds. And that is where they break down in terms of our national leadership, is they don't have that connection. They don't have that ability to be part of, you know, to understand the world where most people live. So there's your little nugget from Shakespeare.
Who I never I read
was
a bunch
actually
of
quite brilliant.
I read a bunch of his stuff. The classes I was in, we never got into the Henrys. We read a lot of the other stuff, but we never got into the Henrys so much, which I think are pretty darn good.
Yep.
But it is one of the things about, you know, every generation disparages the young people after him. But I'm going to say, Kevin, that the young people today don't know near as much about the world as you and I did growing up. I mean, it was funny. I worked on the school as a janitor. And there was our own little community in there where people would go to these kind of places for lunch, and they'd do something, and they knew each other. And then you'd go to the people when I worked the truck docks. Whole different world. These are people that work from 3 to 12 or from 12 to 7. And there's a whole world that you never even see. People that are at the bar at 7 in the morning, they got off work a half hour before and having a beer and a burger before they go home. Or the people at 12 o'clock that are walking into going out to find a sandwich at some places open at midnight that you never even think of going. There's almost, in a city like Chicago used to be, with shift working and everything, there was how many different almost societies. I mean, one of the oddest ones is on the trading floor, and you were done trading at 3 o'clock or 3:15, or on a board of trade, you were at 1:30 or 1 o'clock. And, maybe we'd go hit a workout, and we'd be in the bar at 5. You'd have some dinner or something on a Friday night. You know, I'm wandering in my high-rise where I lived, and all of a sudden, every good-looking girl in the place is heading out, and it's 11 o'clock, and I'm heading in. I mean, it's amazing stuff.
Let's examine the order of those events.
Yeah, no kidding.
You head in, and then the good-looking girls leave?
Well, they were. I'm saying
they were on the way out before you got there.
I'm saying there are people that would go home after a regular job, maybe even take a nap, get all dressed up, and on a Friday night, they go out at 10:30 or 11. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of different... different schedules. I mean, even the Tripoli. You go in there, you say, "God, why are you guys even open? What are you talking about? At 12 o'clock, the place is mapped." Well, how could it possibly be mapped? Because all the people that get off the restaurants and bars that close at 11 o'clock, they go out and they have a drink afterward, and a lot of them come here. It is stunning how many different micro societies there are in a city. And you know, if you don't see them, you don't even know they're there, right?
Oh yeah, that's the truth. When I lived in St. Joseph, Michigan, we had a place right across the street from work, where we used to go for a drink after work, and every once in a while, some of us would wind up staying there like all night, and it was amazing to see what would happen there, because in a smaller town, you definitely get the waves of different people.
Yeah,
and in our case, you know, it would be you get the after work drink crowd, and then as that started to dissipate, you'd get the dinner crowd, and as that started to dissipate, you'd get the grown ups out for a drink crowd, and as it became bedtime for the older people, then all of a sudden the younger people would start coming in about 11 o'clock, and it was 20-somethings party hour. It was very interesting to sit there and watch the waves of people come through. But that's, you know, that's an understanding you only get by being out and being connected to what's going on.
Well, Cupson wrote a column for how many years about who was out in the middle of the night and who was in town, right?
Yeah.
S&P futures down 21, NASDAQ futures down 134. Talk a little bit more about the market when we come back, because all the stuff we're talking about has to do with the market. And I'm going to go through some of the numbers on the convention here in Chicago. Pretty interesting. So I'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. S&P futures down 21. NASDAQ futures down 134. We've been pretty steady here for a while. I mean, it doesn't look like it's worsening. Boy, yesterday we were down huge, which I'll talk about in a second. But every time it looked like we were going to have any kind of a buy the dip, the sellers just poured into those guys. If you were a buy the dipper yesterday, you got a bloody nose about six times. It was not a good day for the buy the dippers. Today over in Europe, we've got DAX down 163.9%. Not too bad here, actually. FTSE down 49.6%, CAC around down 76, that's a full 1%. Over in Asia, Nikkei, get a load of this, down 1,600 points, that's 4.2%, 37,047. That one's going to leave a mark. Hang Seng down 194, 1.1%, 17,457, and I'll get a load of this, I've said it three times now. Shanghai down 19, 2,784, that's got to be The Nikkei's worst day since early August sell-off. Yesterday, nobody wants to listen to this, Dow down 626, S&P down 119, that's 2%. NASDAQ down 577, 3.25%. That's more than I've seen in quite some time. 10-year down, is it 3.81, down 3 basis points. The Bund down 4, 2.22. Japan down 3.88. Oil up 60 cents, 70.94, so that's on kind of its low. It's below the range I thought was like 72.5 to 80. Well, it's below that, 70.94. Brent down up 57 cents, 74.32. Natural gas unchanged, 220. RBOB unchanged, 198. Under $2 for RBOB. Gold down 210, still 25.20, but languishing in here. Silver up 5 cents, but 28.40. I think it was, Kevin, were you on Friday when it was over 30? And I said, careful when it's over 30. It keeps always wanting to go down. I didn't think it was going to do this, or I should have sold it. Copper down a penny, 407. Foreign exchange, the euro is 110.4. It was up to 111, so the dollar's gotten a little stronger there. British pound, 131. Dollar's a little stronger there in the last week as well. Japan, 144, sort of unchanged. Bitcoin, down 1,300, 56,634. It was like 61 last week, so that's gotten hit a little bit as well. There are a lot of stuff getting hit here. Andrew, we got forced traffic, weather, sports. Speaking of hit, the Cubs couldn't hit.
Yep, that's right. They couldn't do anything last night. It is, make sure I got this right, September 4th, Wednesday, here in Chicago. It is 6:35. And yesterday, up a little bit of sports, neither the White Sox nor the Cubs did too well last night. The White Sox lost 0-9, and so did the Cubs. The Cubs were against the Pirates 0-5. Diamondbacks fared a little bit better against the Giants. They won 8-7. Over to Chicago weather, it is currently a little bit cooler today. We are at 56 degrees. It's going to be a sunny one out there today, and not too bad. It's going to be a high of 80 degrees. over in Phoenix, they don't have it as nice. They've reached their 100th day of over 100 degree weather. They're currently at 88 degrees, but that's going to hit with a high of 109. It's going to be plenty of sunshine and dangerous heat, it is listed. Other than that, in Chicago traffic, on the inbound, traffic is building on all the major expressways. If you're on the outbound, that's where our only accident is. This is on the Eisenhower, right near 25th Avenue. It's causing some delays near 17th Avenue, 9th Avenue. Other than that, roads are about business as usual, so that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
The management, I know I have my commercial there, and the new commercial, but just to give everybody an idea of how difficult or challenging it is to do some management for individual people other than just throw your money in the market and it always goes up and laugh at everybody who doesn't. I have a new client I've known for a while, and it's the kind of the ultimate challenge, Kevin. It's large account, all in one stock. That isn't that the most active option trader. Tends to trend, and their basis on the stock is next to nothing. So you got to be real careful if any gets called away, because it's a huge tax event, and yet because it's a concentration issue and it's a lot of money, your inclination is to do some sort of a protection, because if it goes down, there's no tomorrow, and the person's retired. I mean, anybody who thinks that anybody can do this, or that, you know, the talent level for doing something like that is all over the place, you can't think that way. It's a very specialized spot. Other than myself, I could probably only name 10 people that I would trust with something like that. And even then, it is very, it's not like, well, obviously, here's what you do. It's not that obvious. You got to watch it by the second. You got to have a serious discussion with the client saying, okay, this is what protection is going to cost. Do you want us to try and snip away at it by maybe selling some calls or not? Because here's the dangers there. It's a big deal, Kevin. If market goes down a lot, all these money manager pretenders are going to be just shown to be pretenders.
They're going to be exposed. Yes.
They're just going to be exposed. And I'm telling you, if it's a challenge for me, I can only imagine what it would be like for somebody who didn't trade on the trading floor for 20 years and it's been his life for so long. It's real easy when you put it in and you watch it go up every month. Other than that, investing is not easy. It just isn't. I mean, people hear Dan talk all the time about, oh, I went to this company and I really, that's how much effort that is to haul your ass to some place and talk to somebody and go through their financials before you commit money to them versus just listening to TV and lobbing one in there. I mean, it's like anything else. Everybody else's job is easy, right?
Well, that's the great service that Dan provides. Is, you know, he's investing in management teams, not in lines of business necessarily. Obviously, you don't want to go, invest in a product that's going to go nowhere. But when he understands that when you have a really well-run company, that's how they earn your investments.
What, Kevin? You know a lot about the computer industry. I mean, that's what you've done for a long time, and you even teach some of the stuff on it now. What do you make of this NVIDIA craze? I mean, they had an amazing chip setup. When you say chip, most people look at the thing that sits on top of your finger. This is not that. It's a big board of a gazillion chips.
It's a whole processor. Yeah. It's a processor.
So they have something. It started out as being something to use for graphics, right?
Yeah, they've always been really, really good with graphics displays. So if you wanted, if you wanted your monitor to be the sharpest out there, and if you're a computer gamer, that's a big deal. So if that's what you wanted, you always got an NVIDIA graphics card to use to drive your display.
Would I even notice the difference if I plunked one on my machine?
Well, it depends on what you're doing. Yeah, if you're just doing Excel spreadsheets and things like that, yeah, or word processing documents, no. If you're doing your average, typical internet surfing, no, you're not going to notice a substantial difference of any kind. But on the other hand, if you're doing, you know, I suppose if you're designing, you know, high-end marketing pieces, that are going to go to the printer and be really sharp, you know, anything that requires a really high resolution and a lot of attention to detail, then yes, you're going to notice the difference in a big way. Plus, you know, NVIDIA graphics cards are, you know, they have a range. Not everything that they have is the best of their best. So people have been using NVIDIA graphics cards in their computers just for your average, you know, your average schmuck using it.
Well, so
they've been in that market for a long time, but because, you know, because graphics is data intensive, you know, for what you display, you generally look at data streams, and if you're just saving, you know, a bunch of numbers in an Excel file and it's formatted, that's not really data intensive. Now, you may have really, really big spreadsheets. You may have some databases that have a lot of volume, but the data stream itself that goes with each line item there is nothing. But when you start to display, you know, graphic stuff, then there's a lot of data packed into a little bit of display.
Well, then, so somehow that morphed over into being applicable to AI, correct?
Yeah, because what's AI really doing at this point? It's doing the things that humans do. It's not doing anything revolutionary. Let's just say that the technology itself is kind of revolutionary, but it's not doing anything that nobody can do. But some of the applications are saying, I can do it really, really fast. So I, for instance, you know, in the academic world, I have seen demonstrations of artificial intelligence where if I can give you learning objectives for eight modules in a course and say, AI, put together a course for me, it'll go out, it'll find you all kinds of content, it will pull it together. And when I saw the demonstration, it was with the admonishment that this ain't perfect, folks, so you still have to check everything. And then you can take it back and say, okay, I like what I have, now go create me the PowerPoints for each class. And it'll do that. It'll do all that kind of stuff in a matter of minutes. Well, I can do it. It's going to take me several hours to do it, but I can do the same thing. So you run into that. You can say for AI, you know what? I want to run a penetration test on my network, and that's pretty cool. You know, you can do that. And people have been doing network penetration tests for a long time as a service. Well, now you can have an AI-driven one that's going to do everything that a human might do, only it's just going to do it all at once really, really fast. So those are what AI applications are. It's not that Skynet is about to take over the world or that it's coming up with new things. It's just that it does the things we humans do faster.
Well, this human is not so good at this stuff.
So that's what it's about. Now, when you start saying, okay, so that's a high capacity, you know, got to do it really fast, got to cram a lot of work into a small space, that's where NVIDIA was well positioned for their processors to get a lead on the rest of the world.
But how? Two questions. One is, how does, just as now, and I'm gonna, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm probably a 3. I'm looking at stuff on the internet, but I've noticed over the last several years, even doing stuff for the show, Kevin, it is harder and harder to research stuff, because anything that's decent, big term, but anything that's decent, I find increasingly blocked. So I'm curious as to how a computer, I'll give you a couple of examples. There's a, once in a while, I'll give a report on the show about the, you know, how much drug manufacturers are using in advertisements. And there's a site, if you go to, it'll tell you the top 10 or 20 drugs that are being advertised on TV and how much have been spent in the last, you know, whatever, month or year or something. If you go there more than twice, they want a subscription. There was a site, I think it's still around someplace, but I can find it, but I think you got to pay. There was a site where every single university, big or small, anywhere you want, Kevin, junior colleges ever, for the last 40 years has like tuition, room and board, out-of-state tuition, and it's an incredible site. I tried to find it a few weeks ago, and I think you got to pay going in. So, or if I want to go to the Tribune, I can't even always subscribe to the Tribune. I have trouble getting into historical articles. How the hell does AI do all that with all these blocks that are up all over the place?
Don't know specifically. I'd have to look into it, but it wouldn't be really hard for ChatGPT to have a subscription to everything.
Okay, so you think they might? Okay.
Yeah, they might. They might just have this subscription, and they're just a high volume user.
Okay. I guess the second question is: I use the term. Does anybody use the term half-life anymore? The half-life of these businesses and this innovation. Well, it's not 2 weeks, but it's also not 30 years. And when you talk about the valuations of some of these companies, and Cramer last night was going bonkers about how all the idiots who sold the market down and how, you know, all it's going to be a great buy. I don't know, Kevin, if Microsoft goes from a 13 or 14 price over revenue, if it's a screaming buy at 12.5, because that's high to me as well. I mean, as NVIDIA, there's been all kinds of rumors floating, and I guess I'm attuned to the rumors a little bit because I think the chairman is kind of a. Yeah, why does he remind me of the guy at Wells Fargo? They're not chairman. They're like you know, carnival hawks, you know, hucksters or something for these companies. And it seems like that's what people do now. I mean, it's all selling the place, but I mean. There's all kinds of rumors out there, and they are just what they are, rumors, of, you know, these guys somehow padding their own supply chain. I mean, their own, what do you call them? The people waiting in line to buy stuff. There's a lot of, and you know, Carl's always talking about all it takes is one person to do something a little better in that industry, and the stuff is just gone if you're not constantly being the best. I don't know. I don't know if you can make a...
And people are catching up, and will catch up to them.
But I don't know how you make a 10-year bet on companies like that. I mean, it is really hard to. We did this on the show when we first started, and Kathy Durbin was still with us, and I said, okay, name me 10 companies that you think not only are going to be around, because they'll be around, but still be dominant in their industries 10 years from now. Hey, what? Once you get past 4 or 5. I mean, Lou, of course, dug into the, you know, we're always going to need a Lockheed because we're always going to have a military. And he was in the military part. And Kathy went for, you know, people who make, like, toilet paper and Kleenex, thinking we're always going to need that.
Yeah, so Kimberly Clark is good to go.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, but you know, you look back at all the winners. I mean, one of these days I'll dig up just for laughs when you're on because you got a memory. Maybe with Russell, we'll have you hang out a little bit. I'll go through the Morgan Stanley Nifty 50 of the 70s. Are any of those firms even around? There might be a few, but Polaroid, Kodak, I mean, God bless. I mean, these are the ones that were going to be 50 years from now, we're going to be dominant in the world. And I don't think half of them are even around. This investing is careful. It's real careful. And I know from, you know, I do a... Well, our signature thing here at PTI, even though we do a lot of stuff for people, like concentration issues I was talking about, it's why I like doing an index program, because if you just send me cash, I mean, that's great, but you're leaving me to pick 10, 15 stocks. I mean, even if you know, $1 million is a lot of money, right? It's not as much as it used to be, but it's $1 million. It's a lot of money. Do you want me picking 15, 20 stocks? I don't hold myself out as the world's biggest stock picker. Now, I could go to Barron's. I could use other people because they're pretty good at it. But I really don't want to pick 10 or 12 stocks and, like, one of them go out of business, you know. So I zero in on if nobody has a stock they care about, we zero in on indexes, which, by the way, there's a million indexes now. So picking an index is almost as hard as picking a stock. When we started this in 97, we were in the SPY, the Spider. It was the only index there. And then we did the Qs and... Now there's all kinds of them. And this year, my brother Dan, a lot of his people are in the XLV. Now, that's not a recommendation. That's the there's like 20 little indexes that add up to the main index, the S&P 500. The XLV is the medical part of the spider, essentially. So Dan's people are in the XLV, and they're having a real nice year. I mean, it's worked out well. They've sold calls against them. It's done real well. Now, 2 years ago, I had a whole bunch of people who wanted the XLE, which is the oil piece, when oil went from like $100 to 80. Well, the rest of the market was up, and that was down. So you sort of have to be careful. But even then, you're not saying, out of all the oil companies in the world, I want to be in Marathon, or I want to be in Exxon. I just never thought I had that kind of talent. I always traded in the OEX pit. Well, not always. Before it was an OEX, I traded in some stock pits. And like I said, if it's a concentration issue and people have stock and they bring it over, we do what we have to do better than most. But by and large, if you say, here, here's $2 million or $200,000, I'd say, Kevin, what index do you like? I mean, rather than picking your worst nightmare, Kevin, can you imagine if we're getting away from 2007, but imagine if I got a client in 2005, which, by the way, we did, and somebody walks in with a portfolio that had United Airlines, General Motors, Kmart, Sears, Bear Stearns, Citigroup, and said, what do you think of my portfolio? I would have said, looks okay to me. Wow. How would that have gone over? Like, that would have been a fart in church. It would have been about an asteroid hitting the church, right? I mean,
yeah, no kidding.
I mean, and people, you know, General Motors, who thought General Motors would go bankrupt? GE damn near did. I mean, went down to what and re-split. So even now with the stock trading 163, really, where is it? 16? You know, what was it, 10?
Well, yeah, and so, you know, what's the phenomenon? Well, you know, there probably are some companies that can be, you know, that are on the perpetual success list, and, you know, until somebody figures out how to invent better toilet paper or how to make bidets cheaper than toilet paper. But the shelf life of companies, especially in innovation businesses, you know, where you're doing something new that hadn't been done before based on a technology innovation, the shelf life of those companies is very short. You know, the classic example, Blockbuster Video.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they made stupid mistakes as the streaming market was unfolding, but they, you know, the video rental business was going to dwindle to almost nothing no matter what.
Where did you go? That would be a... Well, when Kevin pops back in,
I had to cough. So,
all right, well, you know, Kevin, would you, if you were going to do a, and I don't know how you find any details on these companies after all this time, but can you imagine a management class where you looked at the difference between Blockbuster for the last 30 years, they're even still around, and Netflix, and how one continued to reinvent themselves based on everything that was going on in the meantime. I mean, Netflix basically was a Blockbuster by mail, right?
Yeah, it was Blockbuster by mail, and they got their biggest traction by not collecting late fees, by not having late fees. You know, you're going to return the video anytime you want. Kind of mute again.
But the somehow one management group kept up, and one didn't. I mean, you look at.
Blockbuster didn't want to give up the fees that they were earning on late fees. That they were making a lot of money off of late fees.
Oh, really? I didn't know
so
that.
They didn't see what was coming. They didn't see that they were, you know, month by month, observably losing market share, and then that because they had this big store of digital, you know, basically servers filled and disc arrays filled with movies where they could produce the DVDs that they sent to people, they were positioned for the explosion of bandwidth, and all of a sudden now I can stream stuff to you, and I can do that without it being real choppy, with it actually being a good video experience or viewing experience, and so they were uniquely positioned. If Blockbuster had seen that coming, they could have been equally well positioned. Another example is Sears. Remember, Sears had everything. They had everything, and it was all the catalog business that that was so good to them. Well, they got out of the catalog business, what, about 10 years before the internet took off?
How does a firm that starts off, well, there were three. There was them, Ward's, and Spiegel, right? But they were by far the most advanced. How does a firm that in 18, whatever the hell it was, figured out that there's a huge market for people who can't leave their home to shop? How does that firm lose that vision along the line, let everybody else kick their ass on the internet? It's the same principle, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all the same. So some of it's mistakes. Some of it is just technology obsolete, some business models. So if you're not wise enough to come up with a new business model, or if there is no business model for your product once it's obsolete, then away it goes. And we've seen so many companies come and go in a short period of time over the in recent years, and it's that's a phenomenon, because it used to be that a successful company had a much, much longer life. But they've always, businesses have always come and gone. It's not that never happened before, but now with accelerating technological advances, and I've talked about this before on the show, you got to think in terms of what are the enabling technologies. What are the things that make the next step feasible? So, it is things like, more available, cheap bandwidth. What are your download speeds now compared to what your download speeds were even 5 years ago? You have so much more available to you now. So that would be an example. The ability to transfer, the ability to store data inexpensively. All of those kinds of things that are, every time you take a step forward in one of those, you might have to drag a couple other aspects of technology with it. But every time you do, all of a sudden things that you, they're not new ideas. There's really not that much new under the sun. But they're not new ideas, but they are things that are now feasible when they weren't before.
Well, I just can't even imagining it, Kevin. I'm going to have to try and find a picture, if there is one somewhere. If anybody who ever walked into not just a regular old Sears store, but if you walked into the catalog store, and a big store might have a room where they have the catalog store, the catalogs all lined up on the thing where you could pull them up and pull them out and read them individually. It had to be, what, 8-10 feet long? Easy?
Yeah.
I mean, we had a crummy old, well, it wasn't crummy, I'm sure it'd be worth a fortune now, a Chris-Craft speedboat, 16 foot, and I went to one of those, the yacht stores, and I'm like, God, this place is a rip. We're 16, we don't have any money. So there was a Sears boating and yachting catalog. You could buy your ropes and buy your stuff in there, and the things you hang over the side of the boat when you pull up to the deck, they were, a tenth of the price of these places. I can't imagine, and you go online now and you'll see an L.L. Bean or people that are successful, Duluth Trading and those kinds of places. Yet, if it was a Home Depot site, can you imagine what of an incredibly robust Sears catalog site would look like? It would be 10 times bigger than anybody.
Yeah, they were Amazon before there was Amazon.
Yeah, and they had the auto catalog, any kind of part, anything you wanted for your car, lights, headlights, you name it. Anyway, it's just, hey, I got a question for you before we run to Russell. I've always been kind of curious, is when you go to the checkout counter now in the, Myers, wherever you go, you give them your credit card, there's a thing there, how much cash back you want. And I always wondered, how does that cash work? Does that go right on your, like you bought an extra $5 worth of, pork sausages or what? Or does that become a cash advance or whatever? Well, now, what's with this big federal investigation? How much money the Myerses are charging you for the cash advance? Is it like a 2 or 3%? How does it even work? Do you have any idea, or should we talk about that?
Are they charging for cash back? I don't even know, because I don't ever. They always say, "Do you want cash back?" I always say no. So.
Well, me too. But I mean, evidently there's some fee that they charge, but does it go on your credit card as a purchase or a cash advance?
And on a credit card, I could see why they might want to recover the fee, just because they're going to pay their, you know, 1% or whatever rate they have, which is probably pretty low. But they're going to pay that to, you know, as the merchant. So, you know, you're basically, they're getting charged for making change for you. So I get why they might want to do that. If you're using a debit card, then that works more like an ATM where there's just a fee per transaction. So if it's a fee per transaction, it might wind up being 10 cents or something like that. And it doesn't matter what size the transaction is or whether they're giving cash back or anything else, because all you're doing is you're putting through the transaction for the total amount and you're paying the same fee no matter what. So on the debit card side, they're not incurring any other expense by giving you cash back.
Okay. Well, all right then. All right.
So those are interchange fees.
What do you say, Friday?
The
Friday.
Whole thing about how ATMs work and and how all that settlement works, and that's a very involved situation.
Well, Friday, let's talk a little football. Hopefully, the market will have righted itself by then. And is the guy at Florida State now? Is he going to get kicked out with a $50 million kickout thing now, or what? After losing two games.
Damn, he was a national championship contender just last year. So. I'm sure he's getting a lot of grief, but man, how does it feel to be Florida State and you're out of contention for probably for the playoffs? You're out of contention unless you all of a sudden go on a 10-game winning streak.
They can make the playoffs if they win their conference.
Yeah, they could win the ACC. So, ACC's not that good. Good point, Russell.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Kevin, we'll talk at you Friday. Russell.
And I'm a big Florida State fan because he used to coach at Memphis. Thank you. And Memphis next weekend.
Russell, you got to fix your connection there, bud.
I'm mixed on that one. I really like Mike Norvell, but I really like my school, too. And now it's like before it would have been a great thing if Memphis had beaten them because, you know, Florida State and all that. But now that they're 0-2, making them go 0-3 doesn't do a whole lot for you, does it?
That would definitely knock them out. But there's a good chance they're out of it regardless, and they're out of it on Labor Day. That's not good for somebody who expected to be in the mix.
Well,
I'd take him back as a coach in a heartbeat.
Okay. Well,
there.
What do you guys, early line, what do you guys like in this Texas-Michigan game?
Michigan.
I think Texas is the
best team. Out of pure hatred, I want Michigan over Texas.
Oh. I've got different pure hatred, so I'll go with Texas.
Okay. Oh, God. Well, Harbaugh's gone, right? And they lost, what did Joel say yesterday, that there's no quarterback that stepped up being anywhere near the equal the guy who left. That's a problem.
Yeah.
But boy,
Texas is very talented. So we'll see what happens.
You know, hey, who's got the biggest stadium these days? 107,000 people in Texas A&M. Is there somebody?
It's Neyland in Knoxville,
Tennessee,
just by a thread.
Tennessee?
Yeah, it's Tennessee by a thread.
What are they like? 110 or something?
Yeah. I mean, it's really how many people can you sardine in?
Ah. Well, Michigan.
Yeah, they look about the same, but I do believe Neyland is the biggest one. Doesn't mean it's not a dump, but it's huge.
Well,
I've been there. It is absolutely huge.
God. Yeah. Well, it's I like some of the. If you look at the iterations, like Penn State is huge now, but it's the same place that wasn't huge, and they just keep adding like a deck, and then they'll add.
They go up.
They go add a thing in the corner, which is like, God, they put stands over there. It's like the Bob Uecker seats. They put some there and. Anyway, it's really what do you, Texas A&M. I mean, I wish we watched the Irish game last week. It looked like God, how many students were there, Kevin? It looked like there had to be 25,000-30,000 students. That school's huge, right?
It's gigantic.
Yeah, it is, and you can't get to College Station from anywhere else, so they might as well put every student into the stands.
My brother Dan was down there for. When he worked for GATX for some reason, there was something going on in that town. He says the place is unreal. There's between buildings, there's like air conditioned walkways and stuff. And the baseball stadium holds like 25,000 people. And it's gorgeous. They where do they get all their money from? Texas mining or something?
Oil.
Oil. It's all oil money.
Wow. Oh yeah, You know, I went to Oklahoma State, and we in the PhD program, we totally talked about the oil market and its impact on our endowment, and it's the same for Texas, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M as well.
Really?
All that energy money.
That's all. Let's gotta go. Well, Kevin, thank you much. Talk at you Friday, buddy. Russell,
all right, see you guys.
What'd you make it a sell-off yesterday?
I was shocked, man. I was like in the office, and then I commuted home, and I was like, "Holy crap! What just happened?"
We were searching all day for what was happening. Well, you know, there was the.
I think people are. I you know, we got that employment number later this week, and I think people are a little nervous about that.
Were you happen to?
And then you got a fundamental thing with NVIDIA. I guess not really a fundamental thing that they've got. Subpoenas, which does not help the situation, but really, I think it came down to people starting to look forward to Friday. The last employment number we got was a somewhat of a disaster for the markets.
Yeah, it was. We talked earlier. I don't know if you were listening, but it just because you obviously, even though you're a professor, you're not exactly the Hyde Park, ivory tower, and never go out of the little neighborhood type of guy, because you're all over the place, all over the world, for God's sake. I was talking to Kevin earlier regarding, I don't want to repeat too much, but they had that horrible shooting here in Forest Park. I don't know if you heard about that, I assume, but a guy basically executed four people sleeping on the train at 5:30 in the morning. How do you even... The mayor of...
No, what makes you even think about doing something like that?
I don't know. The mayor said he can't even look at the video. I mean,
I can imagine.
Yeah, he goes, the police chief told me all about it. I didn't want to look at it. Mayor seemed like a nice enough guy. And anyway, they interviewed this dude, and I didn't see him. He was on radio, but you could tell he was African-American. And he was on for maybe 45 seconds, Russell. And I'm going to say he put... If ever was a guy hit something, a nail, put the hammer right on the nail, he's talking about, because you have so many people that are afraid. You have people that think it's always somebody else's fault. He goes, you have prices up so much, people can't afford stuff. They're not. This year's worse than last year, and it was worse than the year before.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, this is going on all over the place. And he goes, there's people that have mental issues. There's people that are armed to the teeth. And this is coming from some guy on the street. And then later in the day, I listened to two stumble bums on CNBC talking about when are people going to understand that inflation is behind you, Fed has got us through this thing perfectly, everything's fine, and you just got to keep investing, and anybody who thinks that everything's not all clear going forward is basically nuts. And I'm going, you couldn't put these two guys in the same desk. And did they see the same world? Obviously not.
Yeah. No, I mean, you saw, didn't I send you the Don Lemon thing where he basically was telling people that said everything was worse than it was in the past? He was telling them they were wrong?
Yeah. Well, remember the article?
That's even worse.
Yeah.
You go to your leadership, and that's not what was going. That was an interview. But you go to your leadership and you say, man, you know, your policies are making my life a lot more difficult than it's ever been. What are you going to do about it? And your government looks at you and says, you're wrong?
Yeah, you're wrong. You're doing fine.
Yeah, you're wrong. Everything's fine. See those numbers? Yeah, it's you, man, because you're wrong.
I never thought, Russell, when I was learning this as a Ute. Did you say Ute? As a Ute regarding...
You still say Ute.
Yeah, from the inflation world, and obviously that's all we talked about in University of Chicago. Maybe I talk about it too much now, but... I mean, when Milton Friedman's your teacher, you know, you're going to learn a lot about inflation. And
right.
And I had him for one class, but it felt like I had him for an awful lot more, because every time he talked, I went and found out where he was and went and listened. But I never dreamed, even at that time, and I'll bet you if he was alive today and you could ask him, I don't think he ever would say that with the COVID situation that you could pour so much money in a short period of time. I mean, back in 70s and 80s, I mean, people knew it was there. It was 10-11% a year for a long time, and it was, everybody knew what was happening. There was no dodging it. This time, the amount of money in the system, And then the CPI, I don't think he could ever have imagined that the amount of money in the system that and that rapidly could absolutely obscure everything that is really going on, because there's so much money you can say, what do you mean? This is up. Everything's up 5%. Everything's up 3%. I don't think he even would think that it ever could get to that stage, but this has allowed people to tell people, look at the numbers. The numbers are great. What's the matter with you? You must be doing something wrong.
Yeah, no, that's exactly, and that's, you know, they, I hate to get all conspiracy-like, but I do feel like if you're an established bureaucrat, the federal government, you don't want Donald Trump to get elected.
Well, I don't think you ever want any change.
Yeah, that you don't want Trump to get elected because he's talking about, you know, possibly slashing jobs and now that he's teamed up with Robert F. Kennedy, who totally he needs to be, you know, they made Kamala the border czar, and now the border's not a problem. I think they need to make Kennedy the spending czar and figure out, you know, what where they can trim some of the spending and probably cut a whole lot of people in government.
Russell, maybe you're closer to this than me, but let's not take forever on this one, but it'll take like a little bit. And, you know, obviously, you know, Trump talks that way. And, if it was you or me running, or the both of us, I'm going to say that we would have very much a like platform in that regard as Trump. And it's something that, I mean, he didn't do any of it when he was there, a little bit, but clearly that mindset is very close to mine. But now, the question is, how do you, just take one example, and I don't want to disparage anybody individually, because I think people in Washington, like everywhere else, show up and try to do the best they can for 8 hours. I mean, I'm not going to say that they absolutely are out at lunch the whole time. Now, the Federal Reserve people here that haven't come to work in 5 years, now that I might have a different opinion about. But I'm just saying, let's take, for instance, the Consumer Protection Group, was Elizabeth Warren's gang, right? Well, not her gang, but she's a lot of, now, when that happens, okay, you had, now this is for consumer protection and banks and stuff. Of course, we already have the Comptroller of Currency, we've got the Federal Reserve, and we've got the FSLIC. You already have people allegedly regulating all these places, right? They're not good enough. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have this other group in there, and I'm not bitching at the people. I'm just saying the duplication. Well, I think Russell, and you know, maybe Andrew can look this up, I think there's probably 15,000 people now that work in this department or something, which means you got to get a building, right? Buy it or rent it.
Yeah.
So when you got that kind of people, all right, now you need furniture, you need the cubicle stuff, whatever you call those things, the paneling. Of course, you got to have an HR department, right? Now you got to have a payroll department.
Exactly.
I mean, you got to go through this whole mess. Now all of a sudden, all these people are there. Now, you can't say when people are leaving and being hired and stuff that the HR department doesn't do anything. But how exactly, even if we said, look, this is all duplicative, and what we're going to do is we're going to get rid of this unit. The people that are there are free to, by the way, are encouraged to apply for anybody retiring in any other area of government. I mean, we don't want to just somebody good there. We're just going to flip them out on the street. Why would we?
Right.
Maybe we need, because we've got all kinds of stuff going, you know, and how many wars we're about to fight, maybe, hopefully not, that maybe there's actually civilian people that we need in the Pentagon or some other place. I'm saying the people there are probably very good at what they do, whatever it is they do, and they're not idiots. How exactly does a president even make that happen? I don't even know that you can. I mean, I honestly don't. I mean, it would be a
fool. You know what? You can do it in a way. What you do is you have to take a business approach to it. And you know, I've lived through and survived a couple of corporate downsizings, and basically, what they do is they go to every department and say you need to cut by, and they give you a percent. And you know, part of it is going to involve a reduced headcount.
But what I'm saying is,
and then a few other things as well. And you, this is why I was honestly, and you know, Yeah, you can get just beaten down with what I'm about to say, but this is why I was kind of excited when Trump got elected president. I was like, maybe we would start to get business people in there, you know, and they would approach you know, the federal government like a large business. And, you know, if your expenses are outpacing your revenues and you really are reaching a point where increasing revenues is going to be very difficult, you've got to do something about the expense side.
Well, the only problem with that is a lot of the expenses...
That's what needs to be done. It's way overdue.
But an appreciable amount of your expenses are checks that go to your population. That's a problem.
I know, and that's... Yeah, and you don't have control over that one.
No, and I...
You really... You don't.
Well,
you know.
Well, back up a hair. You said that... Now, if you were to... If he was still alive and I put you on a panel debate with George Stigler, a Nobel Prize winner... against a future Nobel Prize winner, I'll put you in there. He would say, Russell, my friend, it is a business. It's just a different kind of business, and you don't understand it, is what he would say.
You just tell me, that's not a good argument.
No, I'm saying it's the business of politics. But just let's get back into the detail part.
The business of politics versus the business of government. Yeah. Two different things.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, and that's why I said you can't cut the checks to the individuals.
Right, well, okay.
Right,
but now,
there.
Right, so let's go back a hair on this. If you have a business, I mean, you know, PTI, if we had 50 employees, could I come in one day and make it 45? Sure I could. I mean, or my brother could, or between the two of us we certainly could. Would we want to? No, we'd always want to be in a position where we have more work and we're hiring, not firing. But I guess here's what I'm trying. I know I'm beating this up like a friggin' horse. You've got this group, okay, and the budget says you've apportioned, you know, whatever, $300 million for this building and these people. It's in the budget. Congress has passed it, and some president, maybe even Trump when he was in there, signed the damn thing as part of the overall budget.
Yeah,
I don't know that he can go in tomorrow and start firing people. I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't know the process. It's obviously it's a lot different than you and I would maybe like it to be. But
well, and that's what is that project, whatever the number is, thing that everybody keeps trying to associate Trump with?
Project 2025 or something.
Oh yeah, so, yeah. 20, that actually has at a very high level talks about how to go about doing it, and that's why people try to associate Trump with it, even though he doesn't even agree with a whole lot of it. But you know, that there is part of that, and what they're doing in Project 2025 is they want to make more federal jobs. Serving at the pleasure of the president so that they can be fired.
I don't know if that's necessary. I mean, the way it quote, yeah, ought to work. I mean,
but they're changing the rules so that it's easier to fire them.
Well, but I mean, these things are, I mean, we do have a Congress that's supposed to be doing something other than fighting. I mean, I think the proper way.
They're supposed to set a budget.
Well, I think the proper way to go about it would be who's ever. Yeah. I won't say proper. I did say that, but the way you need to do it now is to somehow in the budgetary process get it to what is it, the Ways and Means Committee and so forth, and said we think this particular department is duplicative, and next year we would like not we want to give we're going to cut their budget in half next year and cut it down to zero the next year. And by the way, we're going to matriculate the people over to other places. I think it actually has to be cut out of the... I don't think you can apportion the money and have the president sign it, and all of a sudden you walk in tomorrow and fire people. Maybe you can. I don't think you can.
I think it would take a little... And I wouldn't want to do it that way. I would want to take the first year and, you know, have everybody do a proper assessment on, you know, running your department with 5, 10, 15, 20% less money, and give them a year to come up with that one.
Well, I think
everybody a lot more time to plan as well.
I think what you end up having is, I mean, I tell you what, in our industry, I mean, do you really need FINRA, the SEC, the exchanges, and the states all looking at the same place?
No, put the CFTC and the SEC together there.
We actually had an audit at our place. Now, PTI is a small firm. I think we're a good firm. We had the SEC and FINRA here at the same time. And I think the next week, the futures people came in. We've got five people. They were here with 12. I mean, and the weird part was, FINRA and the SEC never would sign off on the audit, even though we were, I think, perfectly clean. I mean, they always find something. They wouldn't sign off in case the other person found something and would embarrass them. It took months for them to sign off on it.
I've got a lot of insight into the relationship between those two agencies, and it's pretty bad.
I don't know how you go about doing all this stuff. I mean, and it's really hard, Russell, to figure out if somebody did good or bad. I mean, I was talking to some people the other night regarding Kamala Harris, and I read some stuff in her background. To me, seems pretty good. As a person, she doesn't seem horrible. I mean, not perfect, but kinds of things. And you sit there and go, okay, but what is it? Matter of fact, we were having this conversation on Saturday night down in Indiana, and the lady says, I just have a really good feeling for her. And I said, okay, I'll run with you on that one. Let's just say, so do I. Now, what does that mean exactly? Well, it means I have a good feeling for her, I'm going to vote for her. I said, but does that mean she should be president? Well, she connects with people. I said, so did my grandmother. She's a brilliant lady that ran a store, ran everything. Doesn't mean she really belonged in the Oval Office, even though she was my grandmother and I loved her. I said, what exactly are we expecting these people to do? She was a prosecutor, which is fine. I understand she was pretty decent. I mean, who knows? Now, she was a senator, and I think... I don't know of any sort of bills that were that she went across the aisles, and here was a bill that had been trying to get out of there for 20 years, and finally she pulled it off when nobody else could. I mean, where is the record of, I'm going to say, really accomplishment that somebody may have had, like an Abraham Lincoln was a lawyer forever and did this and that? I mean, where you could point to things and say, man, that guy or that lady did that, and they're obviously a cut above the rest. I don't see, I mean, kind of... Now it seems like you stay out of anything controversial and you don't do anything. I mean, my stepfather, when he got old, well, he was in a couple of nursing homes and they were crummy. We ended up getting him in the veterans home in Manteno. People who listen to the show forever know this. And the people down there are terrific. Now, you go down there and the first thing you see, it's a 6-month wait to get in, Russell, or maybe 8 months. And to be blunt, a lot of people die along the way, and even by the time they call him up, they've already croaked. Well, he managed to make it to 6 months, so we got him in there. The place is, compared to a regular nursing home, is absolutely spectacular. I mean, the people are from the Kankakee area. They all care about these guys. And it's the first thing you see when you walk through is the place is half full. And you go, wait a minute. Why is there a 6-month waiting list and the place is half full? Well, because we need a certain amount of people working here for every person who's in here. Okay, so the budget isn't big enough to where the place is half full when everybody else is waiting in line and God knows what kind of care they're getting somewhere else. Because the care here was pretty spectacular. The phone system had to be 40 years old. Not that that's horrible. The TVs were, they were all tube type. Yet the care was spectacular. Now Tammy Duckworth all of a sudden is appointed that spot. She's the head of Illinois Veterans Affairs. I happen to like the lady. I mean, she obviously lost two legs in Iraq or where the hell she was, and she's given a lot to this place, and she sure doesn't seem like a dummy or whatever. So I have no idea, over the 2 or 3 years she had that job, did she increase the budget? Were more people in there? Were they less? Did she even show up for work? Did she care? I have no idea. I'd like to think that she was better when she left than when she did, or was it just a holding place to the next spot, to the senator's spot or something? How does anyone even know? I mean, none of these people, write a book. Nobody writes columns or anything where they actually say what they're going to do or what they mean or what their thought process is. How the hell do you know what Kamala Harris is capable of mentally or is liable to do one way or the other? Because here's some examples of what she done and when she did this. She was, she ran this company. And, oh, by the way, they kicked ass. They did this. And then she was, even Mitt Romney. He took over an Olympic program that was, in horseshit shape, and then all of a sudden he turned it around. At least there's...
He saved the thing there, and he did, and he was a successful investor, and yeah, No, he had stuff he could hang his hat on.
And you just wonder what, and people don't seem to think that you need any kind of a resume for these jobs. And I'll tell you what, it's got to be the hardest job in the world. Can you name one harder? It's a
freaking popularity contest. And as opposed to what it should be, you should analyze, we should all be looking at these people as a job interview.
Yeah.
You know, and which one do you think is going to do the best? And there's only one person that's ever run in the time that I've been able to vote. There's only one person that I just couldn't vote for on personality, and that was Hillary.
Well, I couldn't. I would never vote for her.
I actually think she lost on that one because a lot of people do vote on. A lot of women didn't like her, which is I think she tried. Some of us really try hard, but we're just not terribly likable people. She was married to a very likable person.
You can't try and be likable if you're not.
Exactly. You either are or you aren't.
And when I found out that she was,
we know that. Yeah. We're grumpy old men.
Well, when I found out she was getting trades in her account in Arkansas that weren't hers, you know, my life story, there's no way on earth I'm voting for that person for dog catcher, for God's sake. I'd worry about the dogs. Yeah. I can't do that. That's just it's a deal breaker. It's a deal breaker for me and Trump, all the people that, you know, he hired and didn't pay.
Yeah.
It's just a deal breaker.
But those are things that they did.
Yeah.
So, Kamala's like kind of worked her way up, and she's been basically a lifetime politician. If you look at, she was the prosecutor in San Francisco, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So take a look at San Francisco and say, is that, is that how we want our country going?
Well, I mean, that was a long time ago, but.
Yeah, no, but well, but still, it's. The whole state is still kind of a mess as well.
Right, but on the plus side, when she moved to Canada, there was a friend of hers that was being abused evidently at her house. She talked to her mother into letting the girl come stay with them for a couple of years. And she has her. I mean, again, I'm not. This is pluses and minuses. I mean, she has a investment portfolio that I think is totally passive. It's in the spiders or something. She doesn't trade, so we wouldn't have any of that crap worrying about Bush favoring the oil companies, Trump favoring himself, Cheney doing whatever the hell he did with his Kellogg Brown and Root. We wouldn't have any of that. We wouldn't have the Nancy Pelosi, type of thing, because she doesn't seem to have any of that stuff in her background. So at least I don't think we'd have to worry about that. I'm so tired of worrying about that with these guys. I mean, or ladies. I mean,
I don't think anybody cares about that kind of stuff anymore because every single one of them has it.
I think that
there are some that don't. It's because the biggest argument that a lot of people have when their guy's doing something wrong, what about your guy?
Yeah, well,
Hunter Biden's a scumbag. Well, yeah, but Trump's a convicted felon. As opposed to what Hunter did, well, he wasn't that bad. Don't defend your guy. And apparently that works.
Well, it works at some level, but how much are we? Yeah. I don't want to get involved in this conversation, but how much are we dumbing down society? I mean, does anybody even know the questions we're talking about? I mean, let alone the answers.
No, they don't.
But I mean, you guys.
I it's unfortunate, but.
But Kevin is in sort of the same say racket. You're in teaching people. It's not a racket. He zeroes in on some of the people who are maybe didn't come from the best families or whatever, but are working bettering themselves, might even have a family, coming to school at night. Some of those people, they kick off to you guys in Indiana, and he has tremendous hopes.
We've never got into the specifics of what I do at Indiana.
You
but
teach.
I split my time. I split my time between the Indianapolis and the Bloomington campus, and in what I do in the Indianapolis campus is basically work with undergrads in Indianapolis. Like I run the finance club, but I have and the reason that I do this and the reason that I continue to want to be involved in Indianapolis is because we got a whole lot of first-generation college students like myself.
Really?
Yeah, I went to University of Memphis, and which was Memphis State at the time, which was very similar to IU Indianapolis and very similar student wise. What I try to do here is nothing compared to what Kevin's doing with Ivy Tech, because Ivy Tech is a wonderful place that gives people a chance to get a leg up with what they want to do with themselves as a grown up.
Well, I got to believe that his feeling that in a lot of sections of society, the younger people are terrific and they're going to be fine. And I have a feeling that you feel sort of the same way, or you wouldn't be doing what you're doing.
You know, I see half and half, but you know what? I see half and half as adults.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's no better or worse here in a university than it is, you know, when I was working at a very large, you know, when I'm not bad-mouthing people at SIBO or anything. But, you know, there were people that were really hard workers, and there were people that showed up and did the bare minimum, as with anywhere. And I have really hard workers here. I've got undergrads that I have placed all over the place from Kelly, Indianapolis.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Well, remember
really sharp ones.
Remember the Star Trek when they had the ship with all the young people on there running it, and Kirk asked Spock, "How are they going to perform?" And Spock said, "Each as their own talents or something like that." Each will perform like they are. Some good, some bad.
Some will do it. So it's everywhere. It's not just, you know, it's not just. And you do try to latch on to the students that you see putting forth effort.
All right, we got to go to break. We come back.
Sir.
Vic's up another 240 this morning, 23-12.
Yes.
You're a Vic's expert. We got to talk about what happened yesterday. what the hell over? SP Futures down 23, NASDAQ Futures down 138. Wouldn't be so bad if yesterday wasn't horrible. So there's no bounce here. Playing the bounce now, you got a bloody nose about eight times yesterday. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, no pay, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Andrew on the board. S&P futures are down 23.75. It's probably as low as we've seen them. NASDAQ futures down 147. Dow futures down 76 are not as bad. Dow stocks, we've got Microsoft down 274. They were down a bunch yesterday. Boeing was one. Boeing and Caterpillar got annihilated. Just Boeing got downgraded by somebody. It's under 160, 159.90. Caterpillar was down another 89 cents, 339.35. But everybody else is just kind of down some. United Health is up 321. No matter what, people got to spend money on that stuff, I guess. Over in Europe, these guys are down a little more than they were. The DAX, they're definitely down more. DAX down 160. It's up 0.9%. FTSE down 39.5. They're sort of hanging in there. CAC around down 81. It's 1.1%. We're in Asia, whack, whack, and we're going to get Russell's comment on this. Japan down 1,600. That's 4.25%. It's 37,047. Hang Seng down 194. That's 1.1%. 17,457. Shanghai, which I thought had a chance of holding 2,800, is not. 27.84, 18, down 18.70. Once stuff starts going, it's really hard to say how far you're going to go. I mean, it's carefully you catch the falling knife, you might get the tip right on your head. Yesterday, Dow Jones down 624. Ouch, ouch. S&P down 119. That's 2.1%. NASDAQ was down 577. 3.3%. When you start getting a 2s and 3%, those are big moves. I mean, we've had years where we didn't go more than 1%. Now we're doing 2 and 3 in a day. A 10-year note down 1 basis point, 3.83. The bond down 4 basis points, 2.24. Japan down 4 basis points, 0.88. We've got oil up 3 cents, 70.37. But still way down there at 70 bucks. Brent down 5 cents, 73.70. Natural gas up 4 cents, 2.24. It seems like in this oil, you get some international news about somebody's cutting back on production or the Arabs are doing something, and it pops up like $2. The next day, it's right back down. Gold is down 460, 25.18. It's had kind of a rough week, but still in a 2,500 level. Silver up 9 cents, 28.43. Maybe it should be looking to buy it down here because it kind of goes from 30 to 28 and back up again. A has head. Be careful with those ranges because as soon as you decide it's a range, it moves. Copper down a penny, 407. We have the U.S. dollar unchanged against the euro, 110.4. Pretty much unchanged against the pound, 131. Japan, 145. So not much there. Crypto getting whacked again here today, down 1,400 bucks, 56,548. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
All right, it is 7:37 here in Chicago, Wednesday, September 4th. Starting up with a little bit of sports, both the White Sox and the Cubs lost yesterday, both with zeros. The White Sox lost to the... I'm going to butcher this thing here. Orioles? Orioles?
Yeah.
I don't know how on earth I feel like I've never heard much about this team before. Like, I've never heard this name.
Babe Ruth was signed by the Orioles.
That shows how much I got my sports knowledge. The White Sox are 0-9. The Cubs were against the Pirates 0-5, and the Diamondbacks won over the Giants 8-7. Over to Chicago weather, it's currently 56 degrees. It's going to be pretty nice and cool one out there today, at least cooler than it's been. We're going to have a high of 80 degrees. Over in Phoenix, we've heard they are on their 100th day of over 100 degree weather. They're currently at 87, but they're going to have a high of 109. And it's going to be hot, plenty of sunshine, and dangerous heat. But over to Chicago weather, on the inbound expressways, things are very, very heavy in the red right now. It looks like no major accidents to report, but slowdowns from nearly every direction. If you're coming in on the inbound Kennedy, it's all the way from about Foster Avenue to downtown. If you're coming in on the Eisenhower, it's about 17th Avenue, and looks like if you're on the outbound, things are only bad in the Eisenhower and the Kennedy. Everything else in the south seems to be clear on the outbound, but that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Yeah, Russell, before we dig heavy into this market stuff here, because you're my VIX man, it is stunning, the elusive capacity of truth, shall we say. We had the convention here, and, you know, how much we paid policemen overtime and how much... We opened up an express.
We didn't pay them. The federal government gave the city $75 million for it.
Okay. Well, we opened up the expressway.
Well,
the mayor and everybody.
I got to defend them on that. But still, I'm sure they spent a lot of extra money that they didn't need to beyond that $75
million. So we're not part of the federal group? I guess we are. But anywho, the mayor.
I don't know. If it's somebody else's money, it doesn't count. You know that.
Yep.
Come on.
Yep. What was the term on the trading floor? Other people's money?
Other people's money. I personally know a billionaire, and if you ask him how he made his money, that's exactly what he says.
Well, that's...
So.
Well, we have a mayor running around telling everybody how everybody benefited from the convention. And, of course, yesterday, unbeknownst to him, words slipped out. What do you suppose the drop down in rail traffic in and out of the city, commuter rail traffic, was for the week? In percentage terms,
80.
No, 50. I thought 50 was horrible.
Well, they said they were just saying don't come to work. And in this day and age, where everybody can work from home, I assumed it was a ghost town. And also, you know, you heard that from some of the people.
Well, the young lady,
some of the people I know that
young lady
worked down there.
Lives downstairs from me, and she's not that young, but she works at. I don't know, one of the crab joints. Is it Joe's or something, one of those places, the high-end seafood places? They were busy as hell all week. Now at the Series, the Series Cafe, they were less than half revenue than they normally do. So it's a question.
I can see that as well, which, you know.
All right, so
every time I'm downtown, I have a burger at Series because I want to keep it going.
Oh, yeah. What do you think of NVIDIA was 126. Now it's raised roughly 106.
Yeah, I could have told you that was going to happen because I had puts that expired last Friday.
Oh, God. Don't tell me that.
I did. So go ahead. Keep going. bring up another sore spot while you're at it.
At least it's not as bad as a guy who used to trade for me. He was kind of an odd duck. And he was pretty popular with the ladies. Well, anyway, he's, shall we say, sharing sleeping arrangements with one of the ladies who's one of the fortunes, one of the ketchup group people. I don't know who the hell they were. And if I remember the name, I wouldn't say it. But
it's not Heinz or is it Heinz or Hunts?
I don't think I should say it. But
then don't say it.
I mean, one of those. Let's put
it.
That.
Wasn't Teresa? It wasn't Teresa Heinz Carey.
Well, it was anyway. But it was a young lady, and she was in the family, and the place was going to be taken over, so he had options in it. And you know, it was pre something information. He says to me, "Well, I got these options. This thing's going to get taken over, but they expire on Friday." And I said, first of all, I can't believe you're telling me this because I can't. If it's insider information, I can't. I said, but here's two things you can do. You can let them expire and buy some more on Monday, or you can roll them over to next week so you're not without them over the weekend. I said, and forget, you know, that you ever told me that. And by the way, he didn't have an account here at PTI, so,
yeah.
You know, whatever. Sure enough, he elects to let him go out, and the thing gets taken over on Sunday.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
That's when those things happen.
You know, but I felt better about it because I didn't have to turn him in. But anywho, you know, so I guess what the moral of the story, you got to sleep with the right people or what? I don't know. I guess maybe that's not the moral of the story, but okay, so we had the rundown a while back, and everybody patched that one together. It was just one day. It was a one-day phenomenon. The idea yesterday, I mean, you and I have talked for months, for years. Does anybody even know how much money we're talking about with these firms? Yesterday's drop in NVIDIA was $300 billion. 10 years ago, how many companies were even worth $300 billion? Five?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's an enormous amount of wealth. And it affects what the Fed's doing. I mean, what does that do to the money supply? If there's margin calls there or whatever, I mean, it's, you know, and all of a sudden here the VIX is back up to 23 damn near. Take it away. What do you make of all this?
Well, I mean, it's personally, I think there's some concerns that a lot of the things that we're talking about are going to suddenly pop up in the employment number that we see on Friday, that everybody's going to suddenly pop up and go, oh my goodness gracious, very few jobs were created, hours worked were down, that it's going to look like there's a slowing. And the reason that we reacted as badly as we did before to the employment number was the feeling that the Fed may be behind the curve. The Fed's not, you know, and I think that's what the fear is going into this week. And with the holiday weekend, maybe everybody just sort of put things off until today. You know,
Russell, does anybody think, I mean, obviously you hobnab with the smart people down in Indiana, and it's, you know, the great school that place has become. Does anybody think, other than, and I'll lob this one out there, and you can disagree with it if you want, other than propping up asset prices, does anybody think that a federal funds rate of 3.75 versus 5.5 makes any difference whatsoever to people's ability in the small businesses to get loans, the price that they're getting them for, makes any difference whatsoever? Does anybody believe that for a second? I don't.
I think some people believe when rates come back down, maybe housing will pick up a bit. But, you know, over a very, you know, large standpoint, over a big macro standpoint, that only does so much. And really, to manage the economy correctly, you want to have a combination of what's going on in the fiscal side, which is Congress, and they're not doing anything, you know, and they're not. And since they're not doing anything, all they're doing is just spending more and more and more. They're not helping the situation, and the Fed can only do so much. And I don't feel like the Fed should take as much of the blame as they are. You know, they're not the ones that say we gotta, you know, put more money into the system. They're not the ones that continue to increase spending, like Congress does. You know, I feel like they're doing the best that they can. And really, I think what the Fed should do, the Fed should go, guys, our job is inflation and employment. You know, get the best employment rate that we can and keep inflation under control. And that's all we're doing. We're not doing anything else. Well, it's Congress, you can't really do that, but you know, that's what they've legally been charged with doing. And since that's what they've been legally charged with doing, they should just say that's what we're just gonna do this. We're gonna do what we're supposed to do and nothing else.
I'm gonna lob one out there, and again, you can feel free to tell me I'm wrong, because I hope I am. I'm gonna say that you actually have something to do. Well, I'm not going to say I have something to do. Obviously, I have something to do with damn managing people's money, but part of that is listening to all these people on TV all day, trying to find out what the news is, because that's what I do so my clients don't have to, right? You're listening to some, but not as much. If you listen to the investing class of the world, they could care less about inflation, maybe a little bit. They clearly could care less about somebody having a job or not. It all has to do with maintaining this wealth bubble.
Yeah.
That is the job of the Fed. Whatever they do, they can't let the market go down.
That shouldn't be their job.
I don't think you're going to disagree with me to say that is their job today.
That's what they seem. That's why, and I wish I knew what fool it was that was on CNBC that said, maybe the Fed should consider a 50 basis point emergency cut because we had two down days in the market.
That was your buddy, your other professor, Siegel.
Oh, that guy?
Yeah.
Well, no wonder. Yeah. I mean, that's just, he must have been having a bad day in the market.
Well,
that's not what they're supposed to be doing.
Well, let me ask.
If everybody would just stay in their lane and do their job, the world would be a great place, wouldn't it?
You sound like my mother. Everybody watch their own kids and dogs, the world would be a better place.
Right.
question regarding that. Here at PTI, a lot of our clients have some money in the treasuries, right? I mean, you know that. And my brother goes every Monday to the auction and buys 3 and 6 months that people want them. That number has come down from 5.5 to 5.1. Right. The Fed for the last 6 months, I think 5 or 6, has actually added money to the system. They are already lowering this rate and actually putting money back in the system, which they probably don't need, in one man's opinion. So they effectively, Russell, have already dropped the rate from 5.5 to 5.1. If they've already done it, why not say it? What's the point of keeping saying it's still 5.5 and we're data dependent when it's already 5.1? They've already done it.
It's already, well, the market's already done it. I know what you're saying. Is that they've jawboned things in a way that the forward rate is already at 5.1%, I believe.
Well, I'm talking three months.
Yeah. Oh gosh, you know what the forward rate is in next December?
I'm going to say
it's about 3.1%.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 2% lower. If you think we're going to get there, you shouldn't be very upset if we get a very weak looking employment number on Friday, because that's kind of what we need to get to 3% within a year. We don't need a weak stock market. What we need is the Fed to recognize that inflation is a bit under control, but they need to do things to save people's jobs, which is the other part of what they're supposed to do.
Well, if you look at, and again, this is a company that it's not like Nvidia, which has, I won't say it's a one-trick pony. It's not, but like Microsoft is kind of all over the place. So that's kind of if you look at all the tech companies, that's probably the real monster on the block, right?
Yeah.
They're trading, or were, at 12.5-13 times revenue, which in all my years in the business, I've never seen a mature company of that size, because there's never been a mature company of that size.
No.
A mature company of any kind of size that trades for that. it's in on a historical basis, it's incredibly overpriced.
Yeah.
Now, you know, that doesn't mean that it won't go up from here. We'll rally back from the sell-off, but there's not a whole lot of if you go back to any kind of a normal growth pattern, if it's 2.5%, you can't justify that price. But I guess my question is, but where I really want to get to, which I started in the wrong direction, but when you look at these labor numbers, and I know you listen a lot of times to Carl on Saturday, not just because it or on Friday, not just because it's Carl, but he pulls stuff out of these numbers that are used to be considered outliers, but now they're not. I mean, you look at the establishment survey, you look at the household survey. The establishment survey, now we had that adjustment last week. If you look at the establishment, the numbers that come out every month, and of course people bitch at the administration, and maybe they're right, that the it seems like the revisions are always downward. So are they cheating on the headline number to get the market to go up, and then revisions are downward? But Russell, the numbers are staggering if you actually look at the detail. I mean, I was somewhere a few weeks ago, and we're having a couple of cocktails, and they're talking about the job numbers have been great for a year. And you kind of, I said, if you listen to the job numbers, it's roughly what, 250 a month over the last 12 months, something along those lines.
Yeah.
So let's say, you know, times 12 is what, 3 million? Let's say 2.5 million, 2 million. We'll pick up. And you look at the household numbers, in the last year, the number's 50,000. They're not even on the, now, if you.
No, they're not.
But if you assume they're both legit, you know, which is a big, what you're really saying is 2.5 million people now have a second job, right? And so when Carl digs into the stuff like, it looks like last month the hourly earnings are up, you know, whatever, a yearly rate of 3%, which isn't horrible, I guess. He said, but the weekly paycheck is actually down. So everybody who's getting a raise, it appears, also is getting an hour or two cut. So, I mean, you look at, it's almost at a point where this establishment number is useless. You know, if you don't dig through all this detail about it, and it, you know, and when you're teaching a class, I mean, you can't say, I don't think, these are the job numbers, by the way, they're all useless, but where do you come out on this?
Well, I can say that.
Well, I know you can, but I'm saying
no, and I will.
I get that.
And also, when you lead with a comment like that, you get everybody's attention. And you know, half of doing what I do is making sure you have everybody's attention. There's two ways I can do it. I can say things like that, or if I just say Warren Buffett, everybody suddenly wakes up. It's the strangest thing. But no, I. You know, and I do it mostly with the low hanging fruit, which is the CPI.
Okay.
You know, and I did it when I was I've talked about teaching in the healthcare program. I'm not teaching in the healthcare program anymore. I'm shifting to something different. But when I would teach in there, I would show the CPI, and I would show all the health, you know, all the health stuff breaking out, which you like to break those. You're the one that kind of led me to that. When you would break that out, when we were doing, when we would go through the CPI, when we were more focused on inflation, but you can do the same thing with, the employment number. Some of them are surveys, some of them are, you know, how many people actually showed up and asked for, you know, filed for unemployment. So I think there's a process disconnect between the two. I feel like you can get unemployment, and at the same time, you can be doing a gig thing like Uber or something like that. So, you know, if somebody calls your house and they say, "Is Johnny working?" If Johnny's working a gig job, which doesn't necessarily, you know, show up on the payrolls, but shows up in the survey, that's where some of the disconnect can come from. Cheney got in a lot of trouble years and years and years ago when somebody was talking about the unemployment number. And he said something, I know what he was trying to say, but he said something about, you know, that those numbers don't work like they used to. People are selling things on eBay. They're doing things like that. What he was basically talking about was people working for themselves and not showing up in the older methodologies. So,
but he also,
that's how I talk about it, you know.
We also knew.
He also shot a guy.
But we also knew that he, You could tell where he grew up, because in my hood,
My
hood, there were all kinds of ladies that, you know, were homemakers. Yet in the back room of the house had, you know, one of those wacky hair dryers ladies use.
Mine's
big, huge thing, and would do 10 people's hair a week. Or the guy had a brother-in-law with a painting company, and on Saturday he'd go help the guy paint houses and make himself $50 or whatever. It was always there.
My wife's grandmother in, I want to say Berwyn or somewhere like that, basically ran a soda fountain in the front part of their house.
Really?
Like, you know, like, yeah, like would make milkshakes and crap, and make sandwiches for kids and stuff, and yeah.
You know where, you should know this, or I'll tell you. Not you should know it because of, you know, for your PhD, but you know how Arm & Hammer made all his original money?
Mm-mm.
He was in the pharmacy business. His dad was a doctor that ended up in jail because they thought he was a communist and accused him of an abortion, which he didn't really do. Anyway, but he was in the pharmacy business, and one of the things he sold something called tincture of ginger.
Okay.
Which is essentially ginger-flavored alcohol. And I don't know what people use it for medicinally, but they use it for something. But it also made one hell of a highball. So,
yeah.
So
the, well, that's one of the things you could get at the drugstore.
Yeah, some of the biggest speakeasies were the drugstores. You go in there and they put tincture of ginger in with some soda or some ginger ale, and you had one hell of a highball. And he made a fortune until people figured out that was what it was being used for. But it was not illegal. But then they made it illegal, and that's when he closed up shop and went to Russia, and ended up in the asbestos business and the pencil business. But he said he was making more money during the early part of the Depression than movie stars, selling this tincture of ginger.
It was a cheap escape.
It was good alcohol, and it was basically a medicinal alcohol thing flavored with ginger. Duh.
Apparently there is and now I'm just showing my old guy thing, and anybody under 30 is probably rolling their eyes at me right now. But there's a certain type of THC that you can buy at the dispensaries that they use the word tincture for, and apparently it's extremely powerful.
Really?
Yeah.
They don't sell hash at those places, do they?
No, they don't. No, I got a different guy for that.
Oh, God. All right, so now yesterday the market tried to buy the dip about 10 times, and every time it didn't work. And now we're down this morning. There's going to be Kramer and everybody else going to be saying, do you think there's fire with this? I mean, how do you even tell? I mean, you and I have had issues with, you know, some of their backlog and everything else for a long time because some of the listeners have sent us videos and stuff. And again, I've always said they're rumors. They're nothing but rumors. You have no idea who these people are, whether it's true or not. I don't like the fact that the company's kind of a one-trick pony, and Carl's always talking about if somebody comes out with something competing. And I think for the lower-level AI, don't some of the new Intel chips and other people, even Microsoft has a chip that I don't think it's as good as the NVIDIA high-end ones, but is it nipping away at some of the lower-end ones? I mean, I don't know anything about that. That's why I rely on those guys to help us out here in Stocks and Jacks. But, I mean, a stock to go from 127 to 107 when you've got 24 billion shares outstanding, that's going to leave a mark.
Yeah. Definitely is going to leave a mark. I think that the thing with NVIDIA, they have technology that we don't want China to have, justifiably so. And my feeling is, I don't really know much about the subpoena, but the second I heard it, my assumption is they're making sure that the technology is not going to the wrong place.
Okay.
And my understanding is NVIDIA has done a pretty good job with that, to the point where they've taken the specs that they're allowed to deliver to China, and been trying to make chips around that so that they can adhere to the rules but still sell into China.
Okay, I get it.
So if they're going through that much of an effort, I doubt that they've been skirting the rules. And China's getting those chips, but I mean, all you got to do is buy a machine that has one of those chips in it, ship it to two or three different places till it ends up in China, and strip it out. And that's what they do.
If you wave to the coast of Vietnam when you go by on the ship, is that Is that as good as saying you landed there and you're shipping from Vietnam to China?
Maybe, but you know, Vietnam and China do not like each other.
That's true. Hey, next week we got a dash here, but
yes,
next week I have a question for you. They didn't want to jump you today. When you talk about, you know, the VIX, and you come at it from the total theoretical side, not total, but pretty much the theoretical side, and I come at it from being in the pit of the 87 crash when all of a sudden nobody could sell anything and the prices just went to the moon. There is some movement afoot in the regulatory area, and I don't know if they're going to get there, that the firms that now provide liquidity to the floor, and, you know, of course the market really does determine what's going on the floor, not so much the firms, but if it gets to the point where firms can't sell anything, then there your VIX tends to explode, right? Well, evidently, you know, I'm going to talk to some people tomorrow night, maybe I'll get a better handle on it, Russell, and I'll email you first, but there's some movement afoot on the regulatory side for professional traders to kind of go away from the snapshot of your position at the end of the day, where they want to regulate the essentially the margin during the day. So in other words, if you
intraday is that for VIX or is that
no? I'm saying,
of,
but if
zero if, DTE.
Well, no, but it says is if you sell somebody, 500 puts 5 minutes into the day and gather them back up or buy something else by the end of the night, you're pretty much flat. Well, now they want to say no for the second that you're short the 500, even though you know where you can go get some more. In my day, would say even if there are a bunch of them hanging in the book, it doesn't matter. You now have to margin yourself. And I got to believe that if the market ever starts to go down, if that's in place, you could see this VIX go from 30 to 150 in a day. But let me find out exactly where that is rule wise, and I'll let you know, and we'll talk about that next week, because that could be a game changer that the regulatory people are so stupid they can't realize that is gonna do that.
That's gonna make a problem.
That's gonna create
a real problem.
Well, why don't you have a really good week, bud, and we will talk about it next week, and say hello to everybody.
I will. We're still trying to find a home for Latte.
I can't
adopt this dog.
That's because everybody knows you don't really want to give him up.
I don't.
So there.
I don't.
So there.
I don't. I really want to get the dog. I got to get myself declared a little bit more unstable, and that can be my therapy dog.
Final question. I got an email here from Carl. The subpoena for NVIDIA. How many people knew about that during the day when none of the rest of us did?
Well, that's what time did that come out? That was.
I heard about it after the close, but that doesn't mean.
What I was going to do is I was going to go back and look at option activity on Friday last week.
Yeah.
That's really what I.
Well, please do. It looks like we got ourselves quite a conversation for next week. Take care of yourself. S&P futures down 17. We actually come back a little bit. NASDAQ futures down 108. Not as bad as it was a while ago. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.